You're listening to the Weekly Portland Podcast, a slice of city life every Monday. I'm your host, Gregory Day. On today's show, we talk with Trace Shannon, co-founder of Voodoo Donut. Now, this was a fun interview, and I learned a lot about Trace's roots in the city, as well as his business partner, Cat Daddy, and the ins and outs of running a successful business in the crotch of Portland. Let's get right to it. Let's meet Trace Shannon. It's a lot of fun.
My name's Trace Shannon, T-R-E-S-S-H-A-N-N-O-N, and I'm co-owner of Voodoo Donut. And we're at the back part of the Vendetta here, and kind of close to some fig trees. And I don't know. Go ahead, ask me some questions, and I'll tell you no lies.
I can do that. Now, you used to own the X-Ray Cafe, which I'm very interested in, because the old Portland, that's the old Portland, and I've heard so much about this place. From Jedediah, Courtney Taylor Taylor used to play there. You've got this, these old recordings that are coming out. So can you tell us a bit more about that time of your life?
So the X-Ray was from 1990 to 94. And I was born in Portland, Oregon. I just turned 50. So I was born at Portland Adventist Hospital January 2nd, 1966. And then my family moved to Colorado when I was like 4 years old. And then I always came back, visited grandparents and family and things. And I moved back here in 1984. And right out of high school, I did not go to college. I went to college for one day. And then in 84, I got a job at John's Meat Market, just a restaurant job. And then I worked there for a while, and then I got a job at Ralph's Hollywood Florist, where I was dating the daughter of the grandfather who started Ralph's Hollywood Florist, which is a great florist, and it was showed me, I got to deliver around Portland, so I actually got, I know Portland really well because delivering flowers. And then right around then, I also got a job at Kinko's, like the first Kinko's downtown before there was a bunch of them, and I'm responsible for the dress code at Kinko's. Because I always wore really nice clothes. Well, not nice, but I'd wear like this. But they didn't know what to do with like my shirt unbuttoned or wearing a tie or something. And so that's why they've got a dress code. And that's a true story. They actually, I'm the reason for the dress code at Kinko's.
That's an exclusive right
here. Yeah, that's true. And then I worked there for a while, and I never learned how to use any of the machines. I was just like a people person and worked the counter. And then kind of through that, I met a lot of bands because they have to run make posters and shit. And I was in a band called the Kurtz Project. And the Kurtz Project was kind of a weird acid-damaged art band with a drummer, a violin, a bass player, and I sang and beat on bongos and things. And then we had strobe lights and go-go girls. And we were kind of like a poor man's butthole surfers. And so Ben and I... Ben was my bass player in the band, or I was his singer, however you want to say that, and we were playing at this place that ultimately became the X-Ray Cafe, 2nd and Burnside. We never served booze. It was all ages, so we couldn't serve booze. Barely made any money, but we kept it open for 4 years, and a gazillion bands played there, because we were open 6 nights a week, and then 7 occasionally, and I always kind of say that was my college, 4 years of college, because it was 4 years, and I had no experience of running my own business, but I kind of had to figure it all out. And the X-Ray was very, I learned a lot about the X-Ray because just dealing with people on 2nd and Burnside and dealing with homeless people, dealing with drug dealers, dealing with crazy people, dealing with obnoxious bands, dealing with kids, dealing with parents who are worried about their kids, dealing with the cops, dealing with, the city, dealing with the landlord, dealing with the neighbors. All of that, I think, really helped me as a person become who I am a little bit, you know? I think I've always been pretty much the same person up through all of that, but I think the X-ray kind of solidified, I'm home, this is where I live, this is my job, this is what I do. I mean, and I was still kind of working at Kinko's because we didn't make really any money. We only had a capacity, a legal capacity of 50 people at the X-ray. We could squeeze in like 100-ish people, but, you know, charging $5 at the door and splitting it 50-50 with the band at the end of the night, it's hard to stay open. But we, as I said, did it for 4 years. I think any all-ages club in Portland hasn't stayed open that long. You know, all-age clubs in Portland don't really last very long. It's very difficult. And but also, I got tired of just booking bands. I mean, I kind of... So from the X-ray... So the X-ray closed down for monetary reasons. And we kind of knew when to pull the plug as opposed to letting it go and go and go and borrow money and do shit. We just said, fuck it and cut it. And
business sense.
And so then we, you know, we still owed like $10,000 to people or whatever, but we were able to have some benefits and we were able to...
So you say we, Cat Daddy and you.
No, this is my friend Benjamin Arthur Ellis, who was in the Kurtz Project with me. He's coming to visit. He lives in New Orleans. He's coming to visit on Friday.
Oh, okay.
We're old friends. So we did that, and then after that, I booked, well, I didn't book shows quite yet. I was a security guard at Burbadi's. Burbadi's opened up a club called Pan, which is where the X-ray, or where the donut shop is now. Now it's the Kit Kat Club, but I used to book that room. But before that, I was just like the door guy for a couple of days a week. And then I would also, I have a band called the Karaoke from Hell Band, which is a live karaoke band. So it's just like karaoke, but it's with a band and you get the words. It's kind of confusing, but once you see it and do it, it makes perfect sense. And we know like 700 songs. But we've been doing that too at Dante's for 14 years, I think.
Wow.
So we've been doing that for like 14 years. So at some point I was like, you know, I wasn't doing that yet, but I was being a security guy. The guy got fired or whatever happened at Burbadi's. I ended up saying, well, hell, I used to book the X-ray. I can probably book this room. So I booked Burbadi's for 4 years. And that would bring us up to 99 or 2000 or something.
Right.
Maybe 2001. And then there was a couple of years of where I just did karaoke and DJed. And that was where, that's how I paid my rent and did stuff. But, you know, it was every gig, you know, making $50 on a Wednesday and making $75 on a Monday and making $50 on a Thursday. It was getting kind of complicated. And I wasn't quite sure what my next move was. And then my friend Cat Daddy, who's an old friend of mine, he moved to Memphis. He's from Memphis, moved back to Memphis. He showed back up, surprised me, and said, hey, I don't want to open this bar in Memphis that I was going to do. I want to open up a business in Portland. I want to do it with you. And I was like, great. I'm so fucking hungry to do something that let's do something. So, and I was just ready because I was like hustling, you know. And we didn't know it was going to be a donut shop at all. We just knew it was going to be something. We thought it was going to be a bar. Maybe we were going to maybe do a tour thing, and we had all sorts of crazy ideas. But
I'm curious about those crazy ideas.
Well, like a tour thing, we were gonna get like funny cars, like get like the Kurt Cobain where he was in Portland, and have some like shitty like primer gray Nova, and then have like a fancy car, like have different cars for different tours, and different tour people, and do different. I wanted to do a tour that was only really meant a lot to me. Like I'd go and like this is the place where I broke up with my girlfriend in 1988, and this is my girlfriend's old house, and then this is where I had my first job. I thought that would be a really funny tour. I could probably do that these days, and I'd probably be successful with it, maybe, but I just like the idea of, like, it'd be funny for, like, people. And that was before, like, Portland had this whole tourist vibe, you know? I mean, now, it's like, I don't know how many walking tours that go by Voodoo Donut a day, but, you know, four different ones or something. So anyway, when we finally landed upon, like, hey, let's do a donut shop, and then we learned how to make donuts and all that story. And that was 13 years ago, so that was in 2003 when we opened. So So somewhere between 2001 or whatever it was to 2003, I was still DJing and singing. And then the donut shop. And I continued to sing with the band, and I still sing with the band. And I think that's kind of brings us up to date. I mean, now I have the donut shop. I do the band. I don't really
still
do
the band. Still do the band.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I play every Monday night for... I've been doing that longer than the donut shop. So, yeah. And when Cat Daddy and I both decided to open the shop, we both agreed that we should keep our hobbies. He was announcing wrestling, like barroom wrestling back then, and I was like singing karaoke. And it was kind of worked out great because we're both guys that are good with microphones, and we would have these venues where we could just go like, come to Voodoo Donut, blah, 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 you know, and Cat Daddy was doing it on Thursdays, I was doing it on Monday, and it kind of built, I think, a little bit of steam to kind of get the thing going. Everybody thought we were fucking nuts opening a donut shop. I mean, nobody thought it was going to work. I mean, nobody. My mom, his wife.
Really?
Oh, yeah, nobody. I mean, everybody wished us well, but they're all like, good luck with that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, we weren't sure either, but we believed in it. And, you know, here we are 13 years later, and we have 5 locations.
Taiwan.
We have Taiwan, so that's a 6, because that's a license deal. So we're 2 in Portland, 1 in Eugene, 1 in Denver, 1 in Austin, which is the 5. We have a cart out on 82nd, and we have a license deal in Taiwan, and we're about to open a license deal in Universal Studios in California. So I guess that's 8 locations. And then, you know, there's all this co-branding with Pendleton Blankets and Rogue Beer.
Yes, I work for Pendleton, and I love that blanket.
That's a great blanket. I know. Yeah. That was a really cool blanket. You know, I don't know how, you know, we sold a good amount. You know, that was really cool because they were able to... we went back to the drawing board many times with that, and they were really easy to work with. I really liked the Pendleton people, but they kept wanting to put in their traditional... and I liked it, but their traditional kind of Native American symbols on the border.
Yeah.
And then we were doing these donuts and, like, voodoo dolls and, like, weird voodoo symbols.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So to kind of intermingle them, we didn't want to, you know, be... I don't know what the word is, you know, inappropriate to, like, the Native American symbols that you guys have used for hundreds of years yourself and your company. But they were able to take a chance, and by the time we all agreed that this would work and these could work, it worked. So, but that's cool. And, you know, and whatever. I mean, it's not like we lost money, I think, on that. We still got 40 of those things lying around, but, you know, we'll get rid of them. And I've got a really nice one on my guest room, and I have one, you know, at a cabin that I participate in, so, but yeah, so we've got, you know, we've done a lot of fun little things with different, you know, and it's really, again, I didn't go to school for this. Like, every single day my job is different. It's always, we have now, I think, at high season, we probably have 260 employees. You know, we're open 24 hours a day, 5 locations in 3 states. You know, it's a very different job than when I started, for sure. And I'm still kind of amazed, because I feel as if I still kind of think like we're just playing business. Like, I'm going every day to the office, and like I'm playing business and putting on a tie and going and playing business. And the deal is, what I am really proud of is, like, we run a really fucking great business, and not just because it's cool and it's donuts, but like we run a legit fucking business. I don't think we get enough credit for that. I think everybody, you know, it's funny how Portland, and I don't want to go wah, wah, wah now on Portland, but Portland really kind of, like, turned their back. I mean, we're not very popular in Portland anymore, which is fine. I don't really care, but it's just weird. Like, Cat Daddy and I are the same 2 guys. I was born here. I've been down in the same shitty area of town. I haven't moved. We haven't sold out. I employ people. We pay people well. I've got people that have bought houses, started families. I'm proud of that.
I've heard you're a good boss.
I hope so. And I
travels around.
And, you know, and it's just, like, amazing, like, how... And it's not, like... I mean, there's plenty of fans out there. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that, oh, all of Portland hates us. But it's just... It is this... I mean, you're talking a weird, old, new Portland.
Right.
And, and we kind of get this sort of, like, you know, we're just this tourist... And it's like, we didn't open up to be a tourist fucking draw. I didn't know that. Yeah, when we opened, it just happened. And I think that any business would be thrilled to have a line around their block.
Right.
And it's just... It's that hater thing. And, you know, I don't know. I don't get it. I mean, I'm very accessible. I'll talk to people. I mean, I still get
fucked up. You know, your story is very inspiring, hearing about these humble beginnings at Kinko's, at working as a door guy.
I mean, I had 50. I mean, when I opened Voodoo, I had never paid taxes. Well, it's not that I never paid them. I mean, I would have gotten refunds. I just had never, I never, ever, ever, ever filed them. And then it got to the point where I freaked out about, like, oh my God, I haven't paid taxes ever. And, you know, I'd hear all these people say, like, well, dude, if you never fucking file them, I mean, you're in a perfect position. They'll never know. And I was like, oh, my God. And then, like, as soon as we opened Voodoo, I had to tell Cat Daddy, because when we went into it, we got all drunk when we decided to go into business, got all fucked up. And I was like, Cat Daddy, I got to tell you something. We were, like, on our 18th drink in deep southeast, because we were on some barfly bus or something. And I was like, I've never paid taxes. And he's like, well, that's okay. But I was like, I just want you to know. And I, like, came clean with him. And but, I mean, we are so legit as far as paying tax. I mean, everybody thinks, oh, you're an all-cash business. I'm sure it's so easy to cook the books. It's like, no, we're not cooking the books. Like, we just can't. I mean, we pay an incredible, obscene amount of taxes and shit and fees and crap. But, I mean, it's just like I didn't have a credit card. I didn't have a debit card until, like, 5 years ago or something,
right.
6 years ago.
You're a very low-tech guy. You don't own a computer.
I don't own a computer. I don't have email. I use a flip phone.
Yeah. I love that. I respect that.
I am very, 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 very fortunate that I have. I'm very fortunate that, like, because of Voodoo, we need helpers. Like, it's not like I hired an assistant, but we just literally need a wrangler, and you dealt with Sarah.
Yeah. And she's great, by the way.
She's the best. I mean, she's a gem. And we just picked her out of, like, just, we want you to help us do this. Yeah. And she's just kind of made it her job. And she, you know, she does everything. Like, she's literally the executive wrangler, is her title. She doesn't do the website, but she's in contact with the person who does the website if there's problems. But she just does, she fields 100 emails a day from people that want things. You know, and you're a fella that I love doing this kind of shit. This is what I do. And it's all like, well, you know, how, you know, well, but this is what I do. This is like my job now. This isn't, you know, I'm not doing this for, like, I'm having a blast, but it's fine. I'm comfortable. I'm not for a moment trying to say I'm not having fun. But I just, at some point, I realize every morning when I get up, I have to be humble and realize, like, I don't really have any skills. Like, I don't really do anything. I mean, I learned how to make donuts and stuff, but I'm really, like, I need to continue to just be Trey Shannon, and that's what my job is these days.
Yeah. Actually, I do want to ask you, you sort of breezed over this in the Right at the Fork podcast, giving a donut to Brad Pitt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That just happened? Is there a story there?
Well, when we were in L.A., so we learned... So, this is kind of a funny, long, great story about the donut shop. So we had the idea of the donut shop, but we still didn't even have a place. Or maybe we were just getting the place, but we were still in negotiations or something. Because it was my old bosses at Barbati's is what we were dealing with.
Right.
And my old landlord, the landlord of Voodoo Donut, is my old landlord from X-Ray Cafe.
Right.
And so we... so I was DJing one night. And at Wednesday night at Dante's, and it was like, it was before Storm played every Wednesday, but it was before Storm. I forget who it was, but I used to DJ and introduce her, and I was the MC for Wednesday nights. And for that, I'd get handsomely paid $75
a
night.
That was a big deal back then.
Well, Storm, and Wednesday nights were kind of cool, and I DJed, and ladies and gentlemen from Pueblo, Colorado, and I did my whole thing. And Frank from Dante's, I love Frank, he's at Aces, I love Frank. He let me... you know, do this gig. But Aziza was the belly dancer of the universe. She literally has a trophy, and she's from Lake Oswego, and I knew her from Barbati's, and she would come and dance on Wednesday nights for like 10 minutes, and I got to introduce her, you know, belly dancer of the universe, Aziza. And Aziza came in one night, just saw, like, oh my God, she was all in her jingly, and she, Aziza's so hot. I wonder where Aziza is. I love Aziza. But she's like, oh my God, I'm dancing at this place that's right across the river called the Ararat, and it's this, like, Armenian bakery disco thing. Right. So
Europeans.
She was dancing there.
Russians.
And exactly. And it was so weird. And she's like, oh, my God. And I told them that you guys are opening this donut shop. And I told them you already have a donut shop in Seattle, and we need to go there. You guys have to put on suits, put a tie on. We're going to go there on Friday night. And so I was like, okay. So I tell Cat Daddy, let's suit up. Let's go to the Armenian Disco. So we go to the Armenian Disco, and it's just awesome. I mean, it's just, that place was awesome. I loved it. I mean, it's torn down, and they're building that fucking building there now. But
Mercedes.
Oh, it was, they had the blinky Saturday Night Fever floor, but it was a bakery. I mean, they did all the baking for all of the Armenian grocery stores that are out on the east side and stuff. And, you know, breads and pastries and all that. And then they had that weird little bar, so they kind of had this side business at the front. So Nelly and Avo just died, and R.I.P. Avo. But very old school. I mean, Avo would roll out just huge things of dough. I mean, I watched him. I mean, he have his shirt off and fucking headband and sweating into the dough and stuff. He was so fucking cool. And then Nelly was running around. But anyway, Aziza had told them that we had a donut shop. So when we showed up, they just put this spread out for us. They, like, gave us free vodka and borscht and fucking meats and cheeses and all this crap. And so we're sitting there in these suits watching Aziza belling dance and people throwing dollars at her and doing the whole thing, and she joins us, and they're just going on and on and on with us, and we're just sitting there going, great. And they're talking to us, well, who are you, who's your, you know, where are you going to go for your supplies and your, you know, whatever. And we're like, well, we don't really know. And they're like, well, don't you have a place in Seattle? Yeah, but, you know, so we're trying to tell them we have this place without telling them that we don't. And so finally, it really gets good when, because I was also in a band called the Misuse, which is Portland's premier Rolling Stone cover band. I could still put it together now. We're the best Rolling Stone cover band in Portland. And but I bring that up, and Nellie's like, you like Rolling Stone? And I'm like, I love the Rolling Stones. She's like, I came to this country because of Rolling Stones. Oh, my God, when are you playing here? So she goes to her calendar. So she's, like, looking at her calendar. So suddenly the Rolling Stones, my band, the Misuse, we played that place, like, five times. We're the only rock band to play the era. Yeah. They had, like, bouzouki players occasionally, but it was just a DJ place, and those shows were amazing. But anyway, we played the era. But between, like, the Rolling Stones cover band and the Aziza, the belly dancer, we met these wonderful people, Avo and Nelly, who hooked us up with Timmy B, who's the Bake Mark salesperson for place where we get all of our shit and chocolate and all that crap. So, because Bake Mart is a, you know, they're a worldwide...
Serendipitous.
Yeah, big time. So, well, all of that is because of the Air Rat. And
that's great.
I can never go without saying that...
The Air Rat.
Thank you for Avo and Nelly. And Avo just died. It's really sad. But Nelly, I love those people.
Right.
And the Misuse continued. We played when they had to move. We played at, they opened a joint out by the Copper Penny, and we played out there one time too, but I think that place closed down, and I don't know what's going on with Avo and Nelly now. Well, Avo's dead, but...
Then you ended up in L.A.?
Well, so that was the thing. So we talked to Timmy B. We had a meeting with Timmy B, and we just was like, look, neither of us know how to make donuts. We'll be able to sell the fuck out of them, but we just don't know how to make them. How do we make your product the very best? And he's like, well, you can go up to Seattle. We've got a test kitchen there. You can go down to Pico Rivera in L.A., where our headquarters is, and learn down there. And we're like, well, let's go to L.A., man. That sounds cool. So we went to L.A. and went to this, like, full-on training kitchen that they have. And it took us, like, 3 days. And we learned how to make donuts. And, like, I had never worked in a, you know, restaurant other than John's Meat Market. But I had never worked mixers. And like a three-compartment sink was, like, mind-blowing to me. And so we learned how to, Prince Buster died.
It's no good.
Prince Buster croaked. Fuck, that's sad. Sorry, I just got to forward that. So, let me do this really quick. Hold on for 1 second.
We can take a break.
Well, this is funny because this is what's happening is that my friend Benjamin Arthur Ellis, my friend from the X-Ray, he just said R.I.P. Prince Buster, and we used to have him on our jukebox at the X-Ray, and we make tribute donuts. So now what I'm going to do is forward this to all of my voodoo people to make Prince Buster donuts, and then we'll make a Prince Buster donut, And everybody will wonder what the fuck I'm talking about right now, but...
I'm making history.
We kind of are. It's kind of a good thing. But yeah, look at this. See, since I just do this all on my... Well, I don't need to do Nate. Nay-nay. And I'll do
Only
Wayne.
You. Only you could do that.
Well, and it's funny, because, like... And then I'll do Cat Daddy, too. And phone books. See how flip phones are just fine. Look at that. You just saw how that works to do a whole... We'll see now what'll happen. There'll probably be a Prince Buster donut in the case in the next 2 to 3 hours. So in LA, you're completely overwhelmed.
So
we learn how to make these donuts from these old guys, 150 years between them, blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of it, we had like 20 dozen donuts or whatever, and we're boxing them up in pink boxes, and which is part of the reason. Like, let's use the pink box. That's like... Totally, and it's kind of baking standards, but no one had really made them for sure for donuts as much as we did. But so we had all these donuts because they were like, we don't want them, we're just going to throw them away. So we had a convertible in LA, and so we loaded up the whole convertible full of these pink boxes, and we drove around LA. And we went to like Chick Hearn's funeral and handed them out. And this is before we were even open. Like, we didn't even have a shop yet, but we had Voodoo Donut shirts, and we had... These are Voodoo Donuts from Portland. Oh, we're handing them out. And I was just driving the convertible, and there was some movie set blocking thing, and here comes Brad Pitt walking across the street, and we're like, hey, Brad Pitt, do you want a donut? And he's like, sure. So I handed Brad Pitt a donut. That's what happened.
That's LA.
And then, yeah, we went to Chick Hearn's funeral and got on Japanese. I mean, we were getting press before we were even open. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, and that's where it began. Oh, my goodness. That's where it began, this whole thing, this crazy adventure. I want to ask you, I know nothing about Cat Daddy. I digged deep. Yes. For information about this guy. I don't know much about Cat Daddy. Can you tell us about your relationship?
Yeah, I'll tell you right now. So my friend Ben from the X-Ray, I think one of the things about me personally is I think that I work, obviously, best... with a partner, and it's just, I don't know why that is. I just think I always kind of consider myself like I'm the ball, but a ball isn't any fun unless you have a surface to bounce it off of.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's like a ball in a wall or a ball in a floor. So it's like, I'm the ball, but I really need... You need that. You need the wall. You need the floor for the ball to do its thing.
Right.
And Ben... We have a different relationship than I think Cat Daddy and I do, but as business, it was just a different type of business. But with Cat Daddy, he's just aces, man. Like, I would never... Don't ever go into business with your friend. I mean, that's what everybody tells you.
Yes.
And I've been fortunate to go into business with two of my friends, and I still am friends with both of them. But Cat Daddy and I we're better friends now than we were when we started this fucking thing. And even the worst days are still, like... This is the best job we've ever had.
So that's inspiring, too. That's an inspiring story, too.
Well, it kind of is. I mean, I think it's one of those things where I think I'm pretty good at, like, he's the boss. Like, I have no problems deferring to Cat Daddy.
Right.
Sometimes he's full of shit, and he knows it, and I'll call him on it. But we always, if we do fight, and we've never even really been in a fight, but, you know, we play devil's advocate all the time. And but we're always trying to get to the answer.
Yeah.
And it's never a fuck you, ever. And we've never, ever had, like, it's I think very rare that people, I mean, I don't think most people have that sort of relationship with a friend. Something gets in the way, jealousy, girls, drugs, something happens. And that just hasn't happened with us, and I don't really see it happening with us. I mean, I can never say never, but I don't know what that guy could do to piss me off. I love that guy. I'd fucking fall on a sword for Cat Daddy. He's the best, and he, I mean, I'm the godfather of his children. I love his wife.
Godfather.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't have kids. I'm not married. Cat Daddy, to his credit, he opened up a business, got married, and had a kid all in like the first 2 years or something of the business, which is pretty incredible. And for me, I mean, the one only time I might have got a little like jealous or weird is that like when he wasn't married. And fuck, when he didn't have a girlfriend even, I mean, we Cat Daddied around. That's why he's got the nickname Cat Daddy. I gave him the nickname Cat Daddy. But when we'd suit up with our friend Vince and we'd go to bars and get all fucked up and get fucked up and cause problems. And we'd go Cat Daddy, and then Cat Daddy just kind of became Cat Daddy. And he's kind of the Cat Daddy. Cat Daddy, there's a reason they call him the Cat. Cat Daddy's the best. Anyway, he's just cool. And then it was, and again, I think the only, like, to get back to, like, jealous or what the fuck, for just, like, just a little tiny little bit is when he got married and got a family, it was like, well, fuck, you know, when we started this, it was like you and me, and, like, we were, you know, but then, you know, he's a family guy. And that took me about maybe 2 minutes to get over. Like, it really was like, okay, he's a family guy, that's cool. And I'm, you know, I'm sometimes the rock and roll guy that still runs around and does my thing, and it's just kind of this weird, again, the ball in the wall or whatever. And we, you know, people like to say, well, I think I like to say, I don't know people, but you know, there's Donut, D-O-U-G-H-N-U-T. I mean, the whole reason we open up a donut shop is spell it correctly, but I always like to say he's the dough and I'm the nut.
I'm the nut, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of true. Like, he had a lot more experience. He has a degree in hospitality in college and shit.
Right.
He worked.
Strong business acumen.
Also has an English degree and shit. I mean, I owned a business, but, you know, he's been working since he was 12 years old and, you know, he's just a really smart guy, and I mean, I'm completely fortunate to have run into him. But you know, we were buddies. I mean, there's no reason to have run into him. We were friends for fucking years.
Yeah.
And now we're just on this crazy ride together, and it's just it's awesome to have him. I would hate to be doing this by myself. I mean, what a pain in the ass.
Yeah. It does seem like you're enjoying yourself.
Oh, totally. I mean, I still, even as I said, the worst days. I mean, you got to fire somebody or shit happens, you know, and it's, you know, it's not good, but you got to get through it and deal with it. And it's just, it's really good to have a business partner that gets it. And, you know, and we're super fortunate, and you know, I was talking about our workers and stuff, but, you know, we've got a lot of people that worked for us for 10 years, 9 years, 8 years, 7 years, and, you know, that have moved up and are regional managers and managers and Sarahs and, you know, merchandise people, and people are getting married and having children and buying houses and all of that, you know, because of Voodoo Donut. And what I just like to do is, and I'm right now I'm super proud of Voodoo Donut because we just made a little shift with some managers, and we had to do some stuff to kind of put the tree back together, the pyramid.
Right.
And right now I think everybody, I mean, you know, knock on wood, I say this all like, I think this is the best ever, but I think right now we're like the best ever moving forward right now. And people are really excited about where they are, and there's just been, because it takes a long time for shifting. Well, I mean, you know, it's like you're an assistant manager, or, you know, you're a shift manager forever, or you're working graveyard shift manager forever, and just like people don't quit anymore. You know, workers do, like,
that's a good sign.
People in the first month or 2 months or 3 months quit, but you know, when you get to be a shift manager, and you know, and we have health insurance, and we do this, we're not crazy perfect employers, I'm sure, but I guess we're pretty good employers, and that makes me feel proud. But to get back to my whole thing, it's like, what I've just realized is I just like letting people do their fucking job. But like, just, I mean, now that I'm
your
now,
job
well now that I'm the owner and the boss and everything, I remember having owners and bosses that would just meddle all the time, and you know, and I come in, you know, I'm, people totally make fun of me, I'm sure, because I'd come in, hey, how's it going, everybody, and I don't know anybody's names, I'm just awful. Because there's always new people, but I'm like, hey, how's it going? Hey, how's it? And I'm sure people make fun of me, and I think that's hilarious. But I just stay the fuck out of their way. I don't want to go, like, you know, you should be, blah, blah, you know. And it's like you take somebody aside who's a manager and say, hey, those old fashions look like shit. Try to make them look a little better, but, you know, good job. And it will fashions the next day look perfect. So, I mean, it's just, I've got really, 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 really good people, and I'm super fucking fortunate because of that. And that really makes, that's what makes the whole place hum, you know?
Do you think being a door guy for so long made you a better manager?
I think, yeah, I mean, the door guy, I mean, I there was only there was only one night that was dangerous, because I got to work the back door, and I got to take money because the owners trusted me, and I worked a jazz night. It wasn't very dangerous on Mel Brown and Leroy Vinegar night, but I did work acid jazz night, which was a little more really busy and hot girls and the whole deal, but I only worked like 2, maybe 3 days a week doing it, so it wasn't like I was the head door guy. I was just like the guy that wouldn't make sure that people couldn't sneak in through the back door, and that's all I really wanted to do at that time. And then when I started booking bands again, and I just did it my own way. I mean, again, booking bands back in the 90s, it was like I always carried around a backpack that had my calendar in it, because I'd run into people at bars and clubs, book them. I was always just dreading losing my backpack, because I would completely lose my entire fucking schedule. I wouldn't know who's playing tomorrow night. That could be a problem. There was no backup. I never used a computer. I barely used a fax machine. Everything was done on the phone. People sent CDs and 45s and fucking
different era
records. Yeah, and then it just all changed. And I'm really glad I booked bands at that time when I did. And that really did help, because I never ripped anybody off. Like, music booking and playing and all that inherently is crooked. It just is. And I was able to do it without ripping anybody off. You know, not that I should be proud that I did, but it's just like, it's just people do. And I just never did. It just, and that was all X-ray training. And that was just because it was like, well, of course I'm going to pay this traveling band. We only made $14 at the door. I'm not going to take 7 and they're going to make 7. I'm going to pay them 10 and I'm going to take 4. Or I'm going to pay them all 14 and just walk home and know that I had a really good time. And you know.
Now you own your own label. This is...
We have a music label now, too, which is completely opening a record label. It's ridiculous as far as like being a good business model. Absolutely no. But as far as like, I think still helping the brand of Voodoo Donut and some of the releases that we've made and how much stuff that we've done and the ones that are still coming up and the way that we're going forward, I mean,
yeah,
it's
great.
And again, no one's really talking. I mean, you can talk about the label I want, because nobody talks about the fucking record label. It's just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you've got some song. You're on the cover. It's sort of a Sgt. Pepper. The Voodoo Donut song.
Right. Well, that's the with me on the cover. That's the all of the 45s. That's a box set, and all of the songs that were about donuts or people that work for us that don't have songs about donuts. So not every song's about donuts there, but it's every single song that we put out in the 45 box set, all on a CD. It's really good. It's a double CD. I'm on it, Cat Daddy Sam. I mean, we put out a box set of 45s that were all donut-centric. And but the thing is, like, one side would have to be donut-centric, and then the other side, the band could do whatever they wanted. But then we started doing split singles and became more donut-centric, and then the thing is, nobody buys 45s, nobody bought the box set, so it's like, well, let's make a CD, compile all of the songs about donuts, put them in on one CD, and we had them for our company party last year, and
which... Ian Carmel,
right, Ian Carmel, I mean, it's exactly, we put out a comedy 45. I mean, I think it's great, and we're still sitting on 200 of them, so if anybody wants an Ian Carmel 45, come on down to the shop and buy one. But it doesn't really matter, because, I mean, it matters, but it's sort of like, we're doing pretty good with the record label, too. I mean, we've had a record label for 3 years. We've put out, like, for a small music label, we put out, like, you know, 16 releases last year or something, which is pretty insane. And we're going to kind of dial it down, but we still have something coming out every month, starting next month, with the Hazel release is coming up. Hazel's reuniting. That's October 1st. We have an Elvis Christmas 45 coming out.
I spoke to Elvis. He mentioned that.
Yeah, he has a 45 coming out. And then we're also doing a full-length CD. We're not doing vinyl for him. But And this is kind of, you know, we love Elvis, and something for him to sell. Like, I can give him 10 CDs, and he can go out and sell them for 10 bucks a piece and make 100 bucks. That's kind of what we're doing for him. I'm not trying to break even with Elvis. Elvis is just, because we love Elvis. And so his greatest hits, you know, because of all these tapes we've had and other tapes that we found, we've compiled, and then we did some fresh stuff with the karaoke band backing him up. And that full length's coming out in March or something. And I think it's called 57 Fans Can't Be Wrong.
I tell you, very excited about this.
Oh, yeah. Well, the record label's great. I love music. Yeah. And people need to understand, it's Cat Daddy and I putting our money into the record label. And, you know, spent a lot of fucking money on the record label. And, you know, and that's just record labels these days. I mean, the record labels are kind of tough. I mean, if Cat Daddy and I had started Voodoo Donut Labels, I don't think you'd be sitting here talking to me. You know, the donut shop is the reason why the record label even exists. And we always just tell ourselves, it's like, well, we don't really spend money for advertising, because we really don't. But the record label is sort of our money into a big hole that we can call advertising, I guess, you know.
I had to laugh when I heard you on the Ride of the Folk podcast talk about how you wanted to get all the clients from the Big Pink building, and you would have been happy with that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You would have been happy with
that. I'd still be happy with that. I don't think we even have gotten 10% of the Big Pink building. If we got 10% of the Big Pink building, we could even make more money. But, I mean, we could. I feel like...
Funny.
And that, you know, the thing with the Big Pink... I feel that people, like, just always automatically feel like, well, there's a big line and you can never get there and blah, blah, blah. I mean, right now after Labor Day, there's no line. I went to work today, and at 11 o'clock in the morning, there was two people in the shop. No line, two people in the shop. And that always worries the fuck out of me. I'm like, oh, my God, this is it. It's finally going to shit the bed. And, you know, I do. I totally think that. You know, every time, if there isn't a line, I worry. But we also know, because we've been open 13 years, that we can track sales, and we make the most of our money between spring break and Labor Day. So from late March till early September, that's our sweet spot. But then it fucking dies, you know, from Labor Day. But then, you know, Halloween comes up and Christmas comes up, and next thing you know, Valentine's Day. Then it's spring break. So you kind of, you hit these benchmarks.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. I mean, thank you for saying that. And I can always just say that, like, I really feel very fortunate when I wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
And I really do. I go eat donuts.
Thank you for meeting with me, Trace Shannon.
I had a nice time, and thank you very much, and I hope you can get something out of this.
Oh, absolutely.
All right.